grasping for pleasure, theirs and yours, not mine, never mine. But she didn't. Instead, she challenged him in anger. Why do you have to talk? She struggled, but he was unyielding. Why did he have to keep intruding on and interfering with her thoughts, breaking her concentration? He kept confusing her feelings, stirring them into a boiling mess. He held her and looked into her eyes and was aware of her, and something deep within her shifted. Her panic grew, and she closed her eyes. Look at me, beloved. Don't. Don't what? Don't love you? Don't become part of you? I am part of you. This way? In every way. No, she said, struggling. Yes. He gentled. This can be beautiful. It doesn't mean what you've been taught. It's a blessing. Oh, my love, say my name. How could he think this could be anything but vile and simple? She knew everything there was to know about it. Hadn't Duke taught her? Hadn't all the rest? So this farmer wanted to know what it was really like. Well, she would show him. Don't. His rasped command confused her. Don't you want me to please you? You want to please me? Say my name. His breath mingled with hers. You said you wouldn't say no to anything I asked of you. Remember? I want you to say my name. Anything you said. Can't you keep your word? His calm left. Say it. Michael, she ground out. He cupped her face. Look at me. Say it again. Michael. Was he satisfied now? She waited for his triumphant grin, and instead saw his adoring eyes and heard his tender voice. Keep on saying it. When it was over, Michael held her close, telling her how much he loved her and of the pleasure he found in her. He was no longer hesitant, no longer the least unsure, and with his growing assurance, her own doubts expanded. Some unknown and unwelcome emotion opened deep inside Angel. Something hard and tight began to soften and uncurl. And as it did, the dark voice arose. Get away from this man, Angel. You've got to get out of here. Save yourself and flee. Flee. Chapter 13. From Paul's letter to the Romans, chapter 8, verse 25. But if we hope for what we do not have, we wait for it patiently. When Michael went out to do his morning chores, Angel headed up the hill to the road. The faint trail Michael had cut with his wagon during his journeys to camp markets was difficult to follow. On a road less traveled, Angel was soon lost. Everything looked so unfamiliar, she was disconcerted. Was she still walking in the right direction, or had she come full circle and was back near Hosea's homestead where she had started? The sky was darkening, heavy gray clouds closing together. Angel pulled the shawl more tightly around her, but the thin wrap did little to ward off the chill in the air. She headed for the mountains, reasoning that paradise was up there somewhere, and heading that way gave her a better chance of reaching it. Besides, going east would take her away from Michael Hosea. The farther away from him, the better. Things had changed between them. It wasn't that he had finally had sex with her. It was something else, something deeper and more elemental, something beyond her understanding. She wasn't sure what it was, but she knew if she was ever going to call her life her own, she had to get away from him, now. But where was the road to freedom? She hunted in vain. She saw a creek, and thirsting, she went to it. Dropping to her knees, she scooped up water and drank deeply. Looking around, she wondered if this was the same stream that ran through Michael's land. If so, surely crossing it and climbing that hill would bring her back to the road again. The stream looked shallow, the current calm. She had forgotten to bring the button hook. Annoyed, she worked at the shoes until she could pull them off. Pulling the skirt up, she bunched it in front and tucked the shoes into the folds for safekeeping before she waded into the stream. Rocks bit into her tender feet, and the water was so cold it hurt. Though she picked her way carefully, she slipped on a mossy stone and dropped a shoe. Swearing, Angel reached for it and slipped again, falling this time. She struggled quickly to her feet, but she was already soaked. Worse, both shoes were floating downstream. She took off the shawl and tossed it on the far bank. One shoe filled with water and sank. Angel retrieved it easily and stuffed it securely inside her shirtwaist. The other shoe had lodged in the branches of a fallen tree. She plodded through the water toward it. The rushing stream deepened and the current tugged, but she knew she couldn't walk all the way to paradise barefooted. She had to have that shoe. Determined to get it, Angel pulled her skirt higher and waded closer. When the bottom sloped sharply, she caught hold of a branch and leaned out to reach the shoe. Her fingers brushed it once, and the branch snapped. Crying out, she slid down sharply, cold water closing over her head. The current dragged her thrashing into the hollow beneath the tree. Clawing at the trunk, she pulled herself up and gasped in air. Her skirt caught. She clung with all her strength to the fallen tree and kicked her skirt loose. She grabbed the vines close by. The blackberry thorns cut into her palms, but she held on and pulled herself to the safety of the bank, collapsing there. She was shaking violently from fright and cold. Angry, she threw rocks at the shoe until it broke free and was swept along with the current. It lodged in the reeds not far away, where she had no difficulty retrieving it. Cold, weary, and miserable, she pulled on the sodden shoes and climbed the hill, sure she would find the road. She didn't. It began to rain, a few drops at first, then more, plastering her hair to her head and soaking through the shirt waist. Cold, stiff, and exhausted beyond pain, Angel sat down and put her head in her hands. What was the use? So what if she did make it to the road? She couldn't walk all those miles. She would never make it. She was already exhausted, aching and hungry, and she couldn't even find her way back. Who would be there to give her a ride back to paradise? What if it was someone like McGowan? Thoughts of Michael's warm hearth, a heavy quilt, and food tormented her. She hadn't thought to bring any food with her. Her stomach was already knotted with hunger. Dejected, but resolved, Angel got up and went on. After another mile, her feet hurt so badly, she took off the shoes and tucked one in each skirt pocket, unaware when they dropped out along the way. When Michael came in for breakfast and found Angel gone, he saddled his horse and went looking for her. He blamed himself for not expecting it. He had seen the look in her eyes when he made her say his name last night. He had smashed through her defenses for one brief instant, and she hadn't liked it. He followed the road to where she left it, and trailed her to the stream. He found Tessie's shawl. He spotted a shoe print on the bank, and followed her trail up the hill. It began to rain. Michael was worried. She would be soaked and cold, and probably frightened. It was clear she didn't know where she was or where she was going. He found her shoes. Lord, she's headed away from the road. He galloped to the top of the knoll and looked for her. He could see her in the distance, walking across a field of grass. He cupped his hands. Mara! She stopped and turned. He could tell, even at this distance, by the set of her shoulders and the tilt of her head, that she had made up her mind to leave him. He rode slowly toward her. When he was within 100 yards, he dismounted and walked toward her. Her face was dirty, her shirtwaist torn. He saw bloodstains on her skirt. The look in her eyes made him hold his tongue. I'm leaving, she said.
Barefooted?
If I have to.
Let's talk it over.
When he put his hand beneath her elbow, she drew back sharply and slapped him in the face. Michael stumbled back a step, astonished. He wiped the blood off his mouth and stared at her.
What was that for?
I said I am leaving. You can drag me back and I'll leave again, however long it takes you to get it through your thick head.
Michael stood silent.
His anger burned hotter than his cheek, but he knew anything he said now he would later regret. Do you hear me, Michael? This is a free country. You can't make me stay.
He still said nothing.
You don't own me, no matter what you paid the Duchess.
Patience, God said. Well, patience was wearing thin.
Michael wiped the blood off his lip.
I'll give you a ride to the road.
He walked to his horse. Angel stood, mouth ajar. He glanced back at her. She lifted her chin but didn't move.
You want a ride or not? Michael said.
She went to him. So you've finally come to your senses. He lifted her to the saddle and then swung up behind her. When he reached the road, he took her arm and slid her off the horse. She stood looking up at him, bemused. He unlooped the canteen and tossed it to her. She caught it against her chest. He took the shoes out of his coat pocket and dropped them at her feet.
That way is paradise, he said. It's 30 miles, uphill all the way, and McGowan and the Duchess are waiting for you at the end of it.
He nodded in the opposite direction.
That way is home. 1 mile downhill, fire and food and me. But you'd better understand something right now. If you come back, we're picking up where we left off last night, and we're still playing by my rules.
He left her standing alone in the road. It was after dark when Mara opened the cabin door. Michael glanced up from his reading, but didn't say anything. She stood there for a moment, pale, strained, and covered with road dust. Mouth tight, she came in.
I'll wait for spring, she said bitterly, and dropped his empty canteen on the table.
She sank down on a stool as though every muscle in her body hurt, but she remained too stubborn to seek the warmth of the fire. From the look on her face, it was clear she was waiting for him to mock her. Michael got up and ladled stew from the iron pot. He took a biscuit from the pan. Setting both before her, he smiled ruefully. A small frown flickered across her brow as she glanced up. Obviously famished, she ate. He poured her coffee. She sipped at it while watching him fill a pan with hot water. When he leaned his elbow on the mantel and looked at her, she lowered her head and went back to eating her supper.
Sit over here, he said when she finished.
She was so tired she could hardly get up, but she did what he told her. He knelt and set the pan of water at her feet and eased the shoes off. All the way back, she had imagined him gloating and taunting, rubbing her face in her own broken pride. Instead, he knelt before her and washed her dirty, blistered feet. Throat burning, she looked down at his dark head and struggled with the feelings rising in her. She waited for them to die away, but they wouldn't. They stayed and grew and made her hurt even more. His hands were so gentle. He took such care. When her feet were clean, he kneaded her aching calves. He cast the dirty water outside and poured more, setting the pan in her lap. He took her hands and washed them as well. He kissed her stained, scratched palms and worked salve in. Then he wrapped them with warm bandages. And I hit him. I drew his blood. Angel shrank back, ashamed. When he raised his head, she looked into his eyes. They were blue, like a clear spring sky. She had never really noticed before. "Why do you do this for me?" she said thickly. "Why?"
because, for some of us, 1 mile can be farther to walk than 30. He brushed the dust and tangles from her hair, undressed her, and put her to bed. Undressing, he lay down beside her. He said nothing and asked nothing. She wanted to explain. She wanted to say she was sorry. The words just would not come. They stuck like hot rocks in her chest, weighing her down deeper and deeper. I don't want to feel this. I can't let myself feel this way. I can't survive it. Michael turned on his side and propped his head up on his hand. He stroked the hair back from her temples. She was back in his tiny cabin and looked more lost than ever. Her body was like ice. He pulled her close to share his warmth. Angel didn't move when he kissed her. If he wanted sex, he could have it. All he wanted, anything. For tonight, anyway. "Try to sleep," he said. "You're home and safe." Home. She took a long, shuddering breath and closed her eyes. She had no home. Her head rested on his chest, and the steady beat of his heart soothed her. She remained like that for a long time, but for all her exhaustion, sleep would not come. She drew away and lay on her back, staring up at the ceiling. "Will you talk about it?" Michael said.
"About what?"
"Why you left."
"I don't know."
Michael traced the side of her face.
"Yes, you do."
She swallowed heavily, fighting emotions she couldn't even identify.
"I can't put it into words."
He curled a strand of her pale hair around his finger and tugged gently.
"When I made you say my name, you couldn't pretend nothing was happening between us, could you? Was that it? I wanted to get inside you, inside your heart," he said huskily. "Did I?"
"A little."
"Good."
He traced her face with one finger again. "A woman is either a wall or a door, beloved." She gave a bleak laugh and looked at him.
"Then I guess I'm a door 1,000 men have walked through."
"No. You are a wall, a stone wall, 4 feet thick and 100 feet high. I can't get over you all by myself, but I keep trying." He kissed her. "I need help, Tirza."
Her lips softened, and she touched his hair. Aroused, he drew back. He knew how exhausted she was.
"Roll over," he said softly, and she did.
He tucked her body into his own and put his arm around her. He brushed his lips against her hair.
"Go to sleep."
She sighed in relief. It only took a few moments for the weariness to catch up with her. She lay in the safety of Michael's arms and dreamed of a high, thick wall. He was there below her, planting vines. As soon as they touched the soil, they grew, spreading the green life up the sides and working their strong tendrils between the stones. The mortar was crumbling. Michael lay in the darkness, wide awake. He would have to give up hoping he could break through her barriers. "But how do I reach her, Lord? Tell me how." He closed his eyes and slept peacefully, forgetting the enemy who was loose in the world. The battle was not yet won. Paul was coming home. Chapter 14. From Jesus, the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 7, verse 1. "Judge not, that ye be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged, and the measure you give will be the measure you get." Paul dumped his meager gear and stood on the hillside. He saw Michael working in the field and cupped his hands to his mouth to shout. Michael left the shovel to meet him halfway down the hill. They embraced. Paul almost wept at the feel of those strong, sure arms. "Oh, I'm glad to see you, Michael," he said, his voice graveled with fatigue and emotion.
The relief was so great he had to fight back unmanly tears. He withdrew and rubbed his face self-consciously. He hadn't shaved in weeks, and his hair had grown long. He hadn't changed his clothes in a month. "I must look," he gave a bleak laugh. "It was awful. Hard work for little or nothing, drinking to forget, women to remember, and fighting just to stay alive." Michael put his hand on his shoulder. "You'll look a lot better after you clean up and have a good meal." Paul was too tired to protest when Michael went up the hill and shouldered his load. "How was it on the Yuba?" Paul grimaced. "Dismal and cold." "Did you find what you were looking for?" "If there's gold in them there hills, I never saw much of it. What I found was barely enough to keep body and soul together." He looked toward his end of the valley and thought of Tess. The last few days had been filled with thoughts of her and how they had dreamed of coming to California and building a place of their own. Losing her was what had driven him into the gold country. Every time he thought about her, he felt the pain coming up again. "Oh, Tessie, why did you have to die?" His eyes burned and filled up against his will. He needed her so much. He didn't know what he was doing anymore. His life had lost meaning when she died. "Are you home for good?" Michael asked. Afraid to trust his voice, Paul cleared his throat. "I don't know yet," he admitted flatly. "I'm just played out." He was too bone-weary to think about what he was going to do tomorrow. "I wouldn't have survived winter in the mountains. I wasn't even sure I could make it home." Now that he was, he felt the old ache again. Thank God he could spend the winter with Michael. He was looking forward to long hours of intelligent conversation. All the men on the streams talked about was gold and women. Michael talked of many things, big things that filled a man's head and gave him hope. He had headed for the streams to make his fortune the quick way. Michael had gone with him, but only stayed a few months. "This isn't what I want from life," he said, and tried to talk Paul into going back to the land. Pride had made Paul stay. It was cold, disillusionment, and hunger that brought him back. Not hunger for food or even riches, but a deeper hunger of the spirit. Michael put his hand on his shoulder. "I'm glad you're home," he grinned. "There are fields to plant, brother, and the workers are few." Michael always made it easy. Paul smiled wryly. "Thanks." He fell into step beside him. "It wasn't anything like I expected out there." "No pot at the end of the rainbow?" "Not even a rainbow." He was feeling better already. He would stay. Better to break soil than your back, better to muck out a stable than stand in freezing water, trying to find a few meager specks of gold in a rusting pan. The quiet, dull farmer's life was what he needed right now. The sameness and routine of every day, watching something grow from the earth rather than ripping something out of it. "Anything happen around here while I was gone?" He could see Michael had done some building and cleared another section of land. "I got married." Paul stopped dead and stared at him. He swore. "You didn't." He realized as soon as the words were uttered how bad they sounded. "Sorry, but I haven't seen a decent woman since we got here." He saw an odd look on Michael's face and tried to make amends. "She must be something if you married her." Michael had always said he was waiting for just the right one. Paul tried to be happy for him, but he wasn't. He was jealous. All this time he had been on the road home, looking forward to sitting in front of the fire and talking to Michael, and now Michael had a wife. What rotten luck. He needed Michael's advice. He needed his friendship. His brother-in-law had a way of listening and understanding things you didn't even say. He could bring a lightness to the heaviest times, a feeling that everything would come out the way it was intended. And for good. Michael raised hope, and God knew how much he needed hope right now. He expected to come back and find everything the same. Women had been chasing after Michael for as long as he could remember. Why did one have to catch him now?
Married, Paul muttered.
Yes, married.
Congratulations.
Thanks. You sound real happy about it.
Paul winced.
Ah, Michael, you know I'm selfish.
They walked again.
How did you manage to find her, anyway?
Just lucky.
So tell me about her. What's she like?
Michael nodded his head toward the cabin.
Come and meet her.
Oh, no, not like this, Paul said. One look at me and she'll be sure the neighborhood went to seed. What's her name, anyway?
Amanda.
Amanda? Nice.
He grinned wickedly.
Is she pretty, Michael?
She's beautiful.
She could be the plainest of women, but if Michael loved her, he would see her as beautiful. Paul didn't intend to make any judgments until he saw her for himself.
"Let me put up in the barn tonight," he said. "I'm dead on my feet, and I'd like to meet your wife after I've cleaned up."
Michael brought him a blanket, soap, and a change of clothes. Paul was too tired to even get on his feet. All he could do now was lean back against the wall, feet outstretched. Michael came back again with a hot meal.
"You should eat something, old man, your skin and bones."
Paul smiled weakly.
"Did you tell her there was a filthy beggar in the barn?"
"She didn't ask."
He pitched hay. "Burrow into this with a blanket, and you'll be warm enough tonight."
"It'll be heaven after hard ground for so many months." It was the first roof over his head in weeks. He tasted the stew and raised his brows.
"You got yourself a good cook. Thank her for me, would you?"
He wolfed down the rest and wilted into the hay.
"I'm tired. I don't think I've ever been so tired."
He couldn't keep his eyes open anymore. The last thing he saw was Michael bending down to cover him with a thick blanket. All the tension he had carried for months left him. Paul awakened to a horse whinnying. He was stiff and sore when he got up. Stretching, he went to look out the barn door. Michael was digging a hole for a fence post. He leaned against the wall, watching him for a long while. Then he went back to the hay and got the borrowed clothing. He bathed down at the creek so he wouldn't offend Michael's wife. He shaved off his beard. Shrugging into Michael's red wool shirt, he went to help him. Michael stopped work and leaned on his shovel.
"I wondered when you were going to wake up. You've slept 2 days clean through."
Paul grinned.
"Just goes to show you panning gold is harder work than putting up fences."
Michael laughed.
"Come on back to the house. Amanda will have breakfast ready."
Paul was beginning to look forward to a woman being around. He expected someone like Tess at the hearth, someone quiet and sweet, good-natured and devout. He came in behind Michael, eager to meet her. A slender girl stood before the fire, her back to them. She was wearing a skirt exactly like the one Tess had worn walking the Oregon Trail. The same shirtwaist, too.
Odd.
He frowned slightly. She bent to her cooking pot, and he was quick to notice she had a nice backside. When she straightened, he noticed her tiny waist and a long, thick golden braid that reached it. So far, so good.
"Amanda, Paul's here."
When she turned around, Paul felt his stomach drop into his worn boots. He stared in disbelief, but she was there staring right back, that high-priced prostitute from paradise. He glanced at Michael and saw him smiling as though she was the sun and moon and all the stars in the heavens.
"Paul, I'd like you to meet my wife, Amanda."
Paul stared at her and didn't know what to do or say. Michael was standing beside him waiting, and he knew if he didn't say something nice real soon, things would go from bad to worse. Paul forced a stiff smile.
"Sorry to gape at you, ma'am. Michael said you were beautiful."
And she was that, just like Salome and Delilah and Jezebel.
What was Michael doing married to a woman like this one? Did he know she was a prostitute? He couldn't. The man had never set foot in a brothel in his life. He had never had a woman. Not that the chance hadn't been presented often enough. Against all reason and natural drives, Michael had set his mind to wait for the right one. And now, look what he got for all his purity. Angel. What story had the witch concocted? What was he going to do about it? Should he tell Michael now? Michael was looking at him strangely. Angel smiled. It wasn't a friendly smile. Her eyes were a gorgeous blue, but they had become deathly cold. She knew he recognized her, and she was letting him know that she didn't care. And if she didn't care, then it was clear she hadn't married Michael for love. He smiled back, colder than she. How'd you get your claws into him? Angel saw the world in one man's eyes, and she felt every stone cast. Her smile tipped up a little more on one side. This man she understood. He probably had never had the dust to make it up the stairs. Coffee, gentlemen? Michael looked between them and frowned. Sit down, Paul. Paul sat and tried to keep his eyes off her. The silence stretched tight. What could he say? Michael leaned back slightly. Now you're rested, you can tell us about the Yuba. Paul did talk, out of desperation. Angel served him a bowl of porridge and a mug of coffee. He thanked her stiffly. She was beautiful, too beautiful, a cold, defiled alabaster goddess. She didn't sit with them or speak. Paul figured she already knew more about the Yuba than he did. Only the men with the best strikes could have afforded her services. What was she doing here? What sweet little lies had she whispered in Michael's ear? What would happen when he found out the truth? Would he throw her out? It would serve her right. Paul asked about the farm and let Michael do the talking for a while. He needed to think, or at least try to. He stole glances at Angel. How could Michael not know? How could he not suspect? What would a beautiful girl like her be doing in the gold country? It wouldn't make sense to a thinking man. But then, one look into a pair of clear blue eyes like hers, and a man could be lost. Michael wasn't a philanderer. He was honest and loving. She could tell him anything, and he would believe her. A girl like her would make mincemeat out of him. I've got to tell him the truth. But how? When? Michael got up to pour himself more coffee, and Paul looked at Angel. She looked back at him, her chin tilted slightly, her blue eyes mocking. She was so sure of herself, he almost blurted the truth out right then. But the words stuck in his throat when he looked at Michael's face. Angel took down her shawl from the hook by the door. I'm going to get some water, she said, picking up the bucket. I'm sure you two have lots to talk about. She looked right at him before she went out the door. It struck him like a blow in the face. She doesn't even care if I tell him. Michael was looking at him solemnly. What's on your mind, Paul? He couldn't make the words come. He gave a hoarse laugh and tried to retrieve his old teasing manner, but he couldn't do that either. Sorry, but she took the breath right out of me. How did you meet her? Divine intervention. Divine? Michael was in the black pit of Sheol and didn't even know it. He had fallen head over heels for a devil with blue eyes and waist-length blonde hair and a body that would tempt a man into sin and death. Michael stood. Come on outside and I'll show you what I've done since you went off to seek your fortune. Paul saw Angel washing his clothes. Nice touch. Did she think doing him a favor would keep him quiet? She didn't look their way. He might not be able to spill the truth about her to Michael, but he sure wasn't going to let her off easily. Give me just a minute with your wife, would you, Michael? I've made a poor impression staring at her the way I was. I'd like to thank her for breakfast and for washing my clothes. Do that. Then meet me down at the creek. I'm building a spring house. You can help.
I'll be along in a minute.
Paul headed for Angel. He looked her up and down again, and this time there was no mistake. She was wearing Tessie's clothes. He felt hot fury all over. How could Michael give them to her? He walked up just as she finished shaking out his worn long johns. He expected her to turn around, but she didn't. She knew he was there, he was sure of it. She was just ignoring him.
"Hello, Angel," he said, thinking that might bring her about quick enough.
She turned, but her expression was cool and self-possessed.
"Angel," he said again, "that's your real name, isn't it? Not Amanda. Correct me if I'm wrong."
"I guess I'm found out, aren't I?" She draped his long johns over the line Michael had put up for her. "Should I remember you?"
"Brazen hussy. I suppose faces all begin to look alike in your business."
"And everything else?"
She looked him over and laughed. "Hard luck on the streams, mister?"
She was worse than he expected.
"Does he know who and what you are?"
"Why don't you ask him?
Doesn't it even bother you what it'll do to him when he finds out? Do you think he'll fall to pieces? How did someone like you get your hooks into him?"
"He trussed me up like a goose and brought me back here in his wagon."
"A likely story."
Her look of boredom infuriated him.
"What do you think he'll do if I told him I'd seen you before, in a brothel in Paradise?"
"I don't know. What do you think he'd do, stone me?"
"Pretty sure of your hold over him, aren't you?"
She picked up the empty basket and rested it on her hip. "You tell him whatever you want, mister. It doesn't make a lot of difference to me." She walked away. On the way to Michael, Paul made up his mind to tell him, but when he reached him, he couldn't follow through with it. He spent all day working beside Michael and couldn't get the courage up. When they headed back, Paul declined supper. He said he was too tired to eat. He went to the barn instead and ate the last of his jerky. He didn't want to sit across the table from her. He couldn't keep up the pretense that he was pleased his best friend was married to a deceiving harlot. He shoved his things into his pack, slung it over his shoulder, and headed to his own place at the end of the valley. Standing in the open doorway of the cabin, Michael saw him go. He rubbed the back of his neck and turned away. Angel looked at Michael and felt the tension building inside her again. She sat in the willow chair he made for her and watched him close the door and come sit before the fire. He took up his boots and began rubbing beeswax into them to make them waterproof. He didn't look at her. He didn't have much to talk about tonight, and he hadn't taken the Bible down to read. Clearly, last night was forgotten.
"You're wondering, aren't you?" she said. "Why don't you just ask?"
"I don't want to know."
"Of course you don't," she said dryly. Her throat was tight and raw. "I'll tell you anyway just to clear the air. I don't remember him, but then that doesn't mean a thing in my business, does it? I didn't remember you either, even after a couple of visits."
She looked away.
Michael knew it wasn't the whole truth, but it hurt nonetheless.
"Don't lie, Amanda. Can't you get it through your head I love you?
You're my wife now. Whatever happened before, it's in the past. Leave it there."
The lull was over. The storm was on them in a fury.
2 weeks ago you wanted to hear everything about me. Do you still want to know everything?"
"Leave it be."
She stood up. Keeping her back to him, she ran a shaking hand along the mantel. "You still don't understand, do you? Even if I wanted things to work, others out there won't let it happen, like your fine, upstanding brother-in-law."
She smiled dryly and looked up at the wall. "Did you see his face when he recognized me?"
"I'm sorry he hurt you."
She swung around, glaring at him. "Is that what you think?"
She gave a short laugh. "He can't hurt me, and neither can you."
She wasn't going to give either of them the chance.
Paul spent a day cleaning his cabin and thinking what to do about Angel. He had to go back and talk to Michael about her. He couldn't remain silent. Michael had every right to know about her deception. Once he knew all the facts, he would do the right thing and toss her out. Like a cat, she would land on her feet. The marriage could be annulled. It probably hadn't even been performed by a sanctified reverend, so it wouldn't count anyway. Michael could put the whole bad experience behind him. With wagon trains pouring into California, he was bound to find another woman, one that would make him forget Angel. Michael came over and chopped wood with him. They talked, but it wasn't the way it had been. Paul had too much on his mind, and Michael was strangely pensive. "Come on over for supper," Michael said before he left, but Paul couldn't stand the thought of eating with Angel across the table. Michael looked annoyed with him. "You've hurt Amanda's feelings." Paul almost laughed. Hurt? That hardened harlot? Not likely, but he knew exactly what she was doing. She was driving the wedge between him and Michael. She was out to destroy their friendship. Well, if she wanted to play rough... "I'll be over tomorrow." Angel was outside beating blankets on a line when he arrived. She paused and looked straight at him. She wasted no time flinging the gauntlet in his face. "He's working down at the stream on the springhouse. Why don't you get it off your chest before it eats you alive?" "You're betting I won't, aren't you?" "Oh, I think you will. You can hardly wait." "Do you love him?" he sneered. "You think you could make him happy? Sooner or later he's going to see you for what you really are." Her hand whitened on the stick. Shrugging, she turned away. "You don't care about anything, do you?"
"Should I?"
She began beating the blanket again. Paul wanted to grab her and swing her around so he could lay his fist into her arrogant face. "You're just asking for it." He headed straight for the stream. All the stiffness went out of her as Angel watched him go. She sat down weakly on a stump, refusing to acknowledge the feelings coursing through her.
"You came just in time," Michael said, straightening and wiping the sweat from his forehead with the back of his arm. "Give me a hand with these planks, will you?"
Paul helped him place the notched log, planed flat on one side. "Michael, I've got to talk to you about something," he said with a grunt as the log banged into place. Michael gave him a dark look he could not decipher. The heat of his own anger made him plunge ahead. "It's got nothing to do with what's happened on the Yuba or why I can't make up my mind whether to stay. It's got to do with something else. It's got to do with your wife." Michael straightened slowly and looked at him.
"Why do you feel you have to say anything?"
"Because you have to know." He could still see her arrogant face. "Michael, she's not who you think she is."
"She's exactly who I think she is, and she's my wife."
He bent to his work again. She really must have gone to work on him the past day. Furious, Paul slammed the next log into place. He looked back across the yard at her. She stood in the doorway of Michael's cabin, in Tessie's clothes. He wanted to go over there and rip them off her. He wanted to beat her and chase her right out of this valley. Michael, of all people, tricked. Michael, with his high ideals and strength of character. Michael, with his purity. It was inconceivable. It was obscene.
"I'm not going to leave it alone. I can't."
Michael wasn't even looking at him. Paul caught his arm. "Listen to me. Before she was your wife, she was a prostitute. Her name's Angel, not Amanda. She worked in a brothel in Paradise. She was the highest-priced soiled dove in the whole town."
"Take your hand off my arm, Paul."
Paul did.
"Aren't you going to say anything?"
He had never seen Michael so angry.
"I know all about it."
Paul stared at him.
"You know?"
"Yes." Michael bent for another log.
"Take the other end, would you?"
Paul did so without even thinking.
Did you know before or after she got the ring on her finger? He asked cynically.
Before.
Paul banged the log into place.
And you still married her?
Michael straightened.
I still married her, and I'd marry her again if I had it to do over.
A simple statement, calmly and quietly delivered, but his eyes were burning with wrath. Paul felt like he'd been punched hard.
You're besotted with her. Michael, she has you fooled.
He had to try to reason with him.
It happens. You haven't seen a woman in months, and then you do, and she's got pretty blue eyes and a beautiful body, and you lose your head over her. So enjoy her for a while, but don't try and convince yourself she'll make a decent wife. Once a prostitute, always a prostitute.
Michael clenched his jaw shut. Almost Angel's own words about herself.
Stop judging.
Don't be a fool.
Shut up, Paul. You don't know her.
He laughed at that.
Oh, I don't have to. I know enough. You're the one that doesn't know. How much experience have you had with women like her? You see everything and everyone through your own set of principles, but the world isn't like that. She's not worth the pain she'll bring you. Listen to me, Michael. Do you want a woman who's been with 100 men being the mother of your children?
Michael stared at him. Was this what Angel had put up with all her life? Condemnation and blind hatred?
I think you'd better stop right there, he said tightly.
But Paul wouldn't.
What would your folks say if they knew about her? Would they approve? What about the neighbors when they start arriving? Good people, decent people. What are they going to think when they find out your pretty little wife was a high-priced prostitute?
Michael's eyes darkened ominously.
I know what I think and what God thinks, and that's all that matters. Maybe you ought to get your own life in order before you examine hers.
Paul stared at him, smarting. Michael had never used that tone of reproach on him before, and it hurt. Couldn't he see he was only trying to help? He was only trying to prevent him from being destroyed by that worthless woman.
You're like my own brother, he said thickly. You saw me through the worst times in my life. I don't want to see you destroyed by some conniving witch who's got your heart so twisted around her little finger you don't even know you're headed for disaster.
A muscle jerked in Michael's jaw.
You've said enough.
But all Paul could see was a prostitute in his beloved Tessie's clothing.
Michael, she's nothing but dung.
He didn't even see the fist coming. He didn't even know what happened. Pain spread along his jaw, and he was lying on his back. Michael standing over him, fist clenched, face livid. Michael caught him by the front of his shirt and yanked him to his feet, shaking him like a rag doll.
If you love me as you claim to, then you love her as well. She's part of me. Do you understand? She's part of my flesh and my life. When you say things against her, you say them against me. When you cut her, you cut me. Do you understand?
Michael, do you understand?
It was the first time in his life Paul had been afraid of his brother-in-law.
I understand.
Good, Michael said, and let him go.
He moved away, his back to Paul, trying to control his anger. Paul rubbed his bruised chin.
She was the cause of this dissension between them. It was her fault.
Oh, I understand all right, Michael. Better than you do.
Michael rubbed the back of his neck and looked at him.
I'm sorry I hit you.
He let out his breath and came back.
I need help, not hindrance.
She's in pain you can't even begin to understand.
He made a fist, his face tormented, his eyes filling with tears.
And I love her. I love her enough to die for her.
I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry, be silent. And Paul was, while they worked, but his mind was yelling the whole while. He was going to help Michael the best way he knew how. He was going to drive her out. Somehow, the sooner the better, he would find a way.
Michael broke the tension.
You're going to have to go to town and lay in supplies for winter. I haven't got enough to stake you.
I haven't any gold dust.
I have a little laid by. It's yours. You can use my horses and wagon.
Paul felt ashamed. But why should he? He was only trying to keep Michael from being hurt. Michael was a thinking man. He would come to his senses. His big problem was overlooking defects of character in others. He looked at a harlot and saw someone worthy of love. Already she was coming between them. Already she was breeding contention. He had to think of some way to flush Angel out of her comfortable hole and send her back where she belonged. And he had to do it before she broke Michael's heart into little pieces. They set the last plank into place. The inside walls were up. Michael said he could manage the roof on his own. He put his hand on Paul's shoulder and thanked him for the help, but the tension was heavy between them.
You'd better head for Paradise tomorrow. Tell Joseph I'll settle up with him in a few weeks. He'll see you get everything you need.
Thanks. Paradise. Maybe he could find out a little more about Angel and her weaknesses when he got there. The Duchess would want her best girl back, and she could always send that big hulking giant who guarded her like she was the crown jewels to get her.
When Michael came in at dusk, Angel didn't ask what Paul had to say. She put supper on the table and sat down with him, back straight, head up. He still hadn't said anything. He was probably thinking everything over, examining and weighing. So let him. The heaviness was back inside her, and she pretended it didn't matter. He didn't matter. When Michael looked at her, she tilted her chin and looked straight back.
Go ahead and say what's on your mind, mister. I don't care.
Michael put his hand over hers. Pain gripped her heart, and she yanked her hand from beneath his. She couldn't look at him. Taking her napkin from the table, she shook it gently before meticulously placing it on her lap. When she raised her head again, he was looking at her. His eyes, oh, his eyes.
Don't look at me like that. I told you before, I don't care what he thinks of me, and he can say anything he wants. It's all the truth, you knew it, and it doesn't matter. He's not the first man who's looked down his nose at me, and he won't be the last.
She remembered Mama walking down the street, and the men who had come to the shack walking right on by, like they didn't know her at all.
I might believe you if you weren't so angry.
Angel raised her chin.
I'm not angry. Why should I be angry?
She had no appetite, but she forced herself to eat anyway, just so he couldn't make something of it. She cleared the dishes. Michael put another log on the fire.
Paul will be gone a couple of days. He needs supplies. He'll be over tomorrow morning for the horses and wagon.
Angel lifted her head slightly, thinking. She poured water into the basin and washed the dishes. Michael wouldn't take her back where she belonged, but she knew Paul would, just to save poor Michael from himself. Something squeezed tight inside her at the thought of leaving Michael. She forced herself to think instead of the satisfaction she would feel when she faced the Duchess again and demanded her money. She could always enlist the bartender's help if she had to. He was as big as McGowan and had plenty of practice with his fists. As soon as her gold was safely in her hand, she would be free. Free! Her chest hurt, and she pressed her hand against it. Michael pulled her close again that night, and she didn't resist. After a few minutes, he drew back shaking, bathed in sweat. He could hardly get his breath.
What are you trying to do?
Be good to you, she said, and used everything she knew to give him the pleasure he deserved. Paul came at dawn for the wagon and horses. Michael helped him hitch up the team. He gave him gold dust and a letter for Joseph Hochschild.
I'll look for you in 4 or 5 days. I spotted a buck on the way over, a big one.
Thanks, Michael said.
As soon as Paul was on his way, he came back into the cabin and took the gun down from the rack above the mantel.
Paul spotted a buck on the way over.
I'm going to see if I can't get us some more meat for winter."
Angel had wondered all night how she would manage to get away without Michael knowing. Now, here was her answer. She waited for him to be out of sight, then slipped the ring off her finger. She put it on his Bible, where she knew he would find it. Grabbing the shawl and swinging it around her shoulders, she hurried out. The wagon couldn't have gone too far. Lifting her skirt, she ran to catch up with it. Paul heard her call. He drew rein and waited, wondering what she wanted. She was probably going to tell him to bring something back for her with Michael's gold. Or maybe she was going to beg him to leave things alone. Well, let her. A lot of good it would do her. Angel was flushed and breathless when she reached him. "I need a ride back to Paradise." He covered his surprise with a curt laugh. "So you're running out on him already?" She smiled derisively. "Were you hoping I would stay?" "Get on up," he said, not even reaching out a hand to help her. "Thanks," she said dryly, and climbed onto the wagon seat with him. Paul had spent the better part of last night wondering what to do about Michael's soiled bride, and here she had solved the problem for him. He hadn't thought she would leave so easily. No bribe, no threats. She was going of her own free will. He clicked the reins, and they set off. Paul glanced at her as she dabbed her face with a hem of Tessie's shawl. It was all he could do not to tear it off her. "How do you think Michael's going to feel when he finds you gone?" She looked straight ahead. "He'll get over it." "You don't care about his feelings much, do you?" She didn't say anything. He looked straight ahead, and then at her again. "You're right. He'll get over you. In a few years' time, California will have plenty of suitable girls for him to choose from. Women have always been after Michael." She looked off toward the forest as though she could care less. Paul wanted to cut her so deep she would bleed the way Michael was going to when he found out she had deserted him, without so much as a backward glance. Hadn't he warned him? But she ought to feel something. It was only right. He was curious. "What made you decide to leave?"
"No particular reason."
"I suppose you got bored with the quiet life Michael leads, or is it just having the same man all the time?" She didn't respond. Michael would see now he was right about her. In time he would accept what a mistake he had made. Women loved Michael. Besides his good looks, he combined a strength and tenderness that attracted them like flies. He would marry again if he was that ready, and he wouldn't have to wait long. The next one would sure be better than this one. "The Duchess will be glad to see you back again. I hear you were bringing in a fortune to her coffers. She never would say where you went." Angel raised her head slightly and gave him a cloying smile. "Don't feel you have to make polite conversation." He grinned coldly. So he was getting to her a little. He dug deeper. "I guess talking isn't all that important in your business, is it?" Angel felt the fury rise inside her. Sanctimonious pig. If it weren't so many uphill miles to Paradise, she would get off this wagon right now and walk. But she wasn't fool enough to think she could make it. Let him peck at her all he wanted. She could take one day of riding on a high seat with a lowbrow hypocrite. She'd think about her gold. She would think about her own little cabin in the woods. She would think about never having to look at another man like him again. Paul didn't like being ignored, especially by someone like her. Who did she think she was, anyway? He snapped the reins and picked up the pace. He hit every hole in the road, bouncing and jarring her. She had to hold on tight to keep her balance and not be pitched out. He enjoyed her discomfort. She pressed her lips tight but made no complaint. He kept the hard pace until the horses tired and he had to slow down again. "Feel any better now?" she said, mocking him. He loathed her more with each mile. When the sun was straight overhead, he pulled off the road and jumped down. He unhitched the team and let them graze. Then he strode off into the woods. When he came back,
He saw her heading for the trees on the other side. She moved as though she were in pain. His saddlebag was under the front seat. Inside he had an apple, beef jerky, and a can of beans. He ate them with relish. She glanced at him once when she came back and went to sit down in the shade of a pine. He tore off a piece of beef jerky with his teeth and chewed while studying her. She looked tired and hot. She was probably hungry, too. Tough luck. She should have thought to bring something with her. Paul opened his canteen and drank deeply, corking it again when he was finished. He looked at her and frowned heavily. Annoyed, he got up and walked over to her. Swinging the canteen back and forth in front of her face, he said, "Do you want a drink? Say please if you want one." "Please," she said quietly. He tossed the canteen into her lap. She uncorked it, wiped off the mouth, and drank. When she finished, she wiped the mouth again, corked it, and held it up to him. "Thanks," she said. Nothing showed in those blue eyes. Paul went back and sat down beneath the tree and finished the beef jerky. Angry, he started on the apple. When he finished half, he looked her way. "Hungry?" "Yes," she said simply, not looking at him this time. He tossed what was left to her. Getting up, he went for the horses and hitched them to the wagon. Glancing back, he saw her picking the needles and dirt out of the half-eaten apple before she took a bite. Her cold, silent dignity made him uncomfortable. "Let's go." He sat waiting for her impatiently. She winced as she climbed up onto the wagon seat with him. "How'd you meet Michael?" he said, as he snapped the reins and they started off again. "He came to the palace." "Don't make me laugh. Michael wouldn't set foot in that stinkhole. He doesn't drink and he doesn't gamble, and he sure never consorted with prostitutes." She smiled, taunting. "Then how do you think it all came about, mister?" "I imagine a girl with your gifts would think of something. You probably met him at the mercantile and told him your family had died on the trail west and you were all alone in the world." She laughed at him. "Well, mister, you needn't even wonder anymore. Now that I'm gone, you can have Michael to yourself all winter long." His knuckles whitened on the reins. Was she making some sort of foul insinuation? Did she doubt his manhood? Yanking the reins, he pulled the wagon off the road and stopped. She stiffened, wary. "Why are you stopping?"
"You owe me something for the ride."
She went very still. "What did you have in mind?"
"What have you got?"
He wanted to rub her raw. "I guess you figure when someone does you a favor, you don't owe them anything, right?" She looked away. He caught her arm tightly, and she looked at him again, her face pale. He glared into her cynical blue eyes.
"Well, you do. You owe me for this ride."
He let her go abruptly. She didn't turn away this time. She just sat looking at him, face smooth and expressionless.
"You know, I never made it upstairs at the palace," he said, stabbing deeper. He untied the leather cord in her hair. "I didn't have enough dust to even get my name in the hat." He tugged it free. "I used to wonder what it'd be like to make it to Angel's inner sanctum."
"And now you want to know for yourself." Paul wanted to make her squirm.
"Maybe."
Angel felt the spiraling begin inside her. Going down, like water in a sinkhole. She had forgotten that everything cost something. She let her breath out and tilted her head slightly.
"Well, we might as well get it done."
She got down from the wagon seat. Paul stared. He jumped down on the other side and came around to stand in front of her. She was white and tired, and he wasn't sure whether she was bluffing or not. Did she think she could walk 30 miles? He wasn't going to give her the chance to change her mind and go back.
"What do you figure on doing?"
"Whatever you want, mister." She took off the shawl and draped it over the side of the wagon.
Well...